Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with Rod Oram. Morena, Rod, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, very well, thank you.
It's a big old week in politics. We've got Waitangi to talk about, which we'll get to in a minute. But I did want to start with what's happening overseas, first of all, because Trump's impeachment is a topic that, funnily enough, should be probably more in our headlines, but kind of isn't at the moment. What are your thoughts about what's going on in the States at the moment? Have you got any insight to explaining where we're at with this? Because it is a process that we don't really have an equivalent to here in New Zealand.
We don't, and it was a very central part of the very comprehensive structure the Founding Fathers created in the U.S. Constitution as a way of keeping the lid on tyranny, was the way they were thinking about it, because of the tyranny of having an English king as their head of running the country before them, or head of state before them. And so it's a way of calling political leaders to account. So that's the mechanism. But it's a strange one in many respects, because in this case, you've got senators, and it always is, it's the House who brings the charges and the Senate who hears them and passes judgment. But the senators are actually acting as judge, jury, and in this case, witnesses.
Right.
And so the most extraordinary thing yesterday, in the first day of the hearing, was a 13-minute video that the House leaders of the impeachment had put together of that crucial day of January the 6th on Capitol Hill. And it was completely fascinating video because it is extraordinarily powerful, sort of really reality television. But also some of the senators were quite distressed by it because they were reliving that moment. But some of them, and these were typically leaders of all the lies about the election fraud, couldn't bring themselves to actually look at the screen, such as Cruz and Rubio, for example. And so we've got this extraordinary situation where they're being asked to pass judgment on Trump, but many of them have been feeding the very same lies that Trump has, and therefore they'd be, in essence, passing judgment on themselves. So what I can't imagine what's going through the hearts and minds and souls of many of these senators. Well, in fact, all of them have got sort of a deep decision to have to make. Now, so far, there have been only a handful of Republican senators who have voted for this process to go through.
Right.
And the first hurdle that was cleared yesterday was a challenge to the constitutionality of it, i.e., could a person who was no longer in office be held to account this way? And half a dozen Republican senators voted for that, that could go through, so the trial proceeded. And the Democrats need 17 Republicans overall to get the two-thirds majority, and it's going to be completely gripping over the next week or so to see, as they search their minds and their conscience and everything else, whether more Republicans might join the Democrats in this.
So what actually happens if he gets impeached? Because as you said, he's not actually in office anymore. Does it matter if he gets impeached? What does it mean for the future?
I think it's very important that this is going through, because it becomes a matter of historic record. If he is found guilty of this, that would be a very, very significant step. The first president to actually be found guilty of an impeachable offence. But more importantly, or just a penalty of that, I mean, that's a significant penalty in itself. Theoretically, all his sort of retirement benefits from the job could be removed. That seems unlikely to happen. But more importantly, there would the Democrats are saying there would be a second vote on whether he would be barred for life from seeking federal office again. And that would only require a simple majority to pass. And that's obviously playing very much on Republicans' minds, because Trump's still got considerable support amongst Republicans, and and he is still considered by many to be, in fact, they call it his party. Therefore, to have him removed from the ability to run doesn't take him entirely out of the frame. He could still be a very powerful backroom operator. Mm. But it would be a chance for the Republicans to start to move on from this very damaging and distorting and destructive era of Trump.
Well, let's bring it back to Aotearoa now. We have just had Waitangi weekend, and we've seen a lot in the media about Judith Collins's particular comments around speaking rights on the Pai Pai, but I'd actually like to ask you about some of the other things that have maybe been sort of, I guess, swept under that media storm a little bit. One of the big issues that seems to have come up a lot that people have been asking the government to take some action on is housing. That's been a really huge topic. What are some of your biggest takeaways from the discussions we saw at Waitangi, and what do you think that's going to mean for 2021, particularly in terms of our political year?
I'm not sure about that because the housing situation is so phenomenally complicated overall. But in terms of helping iwi and other Māori entities to develop more housing, particularly around sort of styles of housing, more collective housing, mm-hmm. With communal space and all the rest, that is traditionally Māori, I think is very important because it's our attempt to find many solutions and ones that appeal to people in different ways to housing. And one of my favourite examples of that is what Tūhoe are doing down in Taniatua, where they're working, have been for a while, on very much a sort of a modern expression of what it means to be Tūhoe in the 21st century, but also what does a marae look like? Mm. And so they've got a very interesting housing project underway there. So I think that's a very exciting opportunity because it is opening up those concepts of how we design and build housing, so we get greater diversity, more expression, and things and ways perhaps that people might relate to in a particular way more strongly than they do on some other. So I'm all in favour of that.
Let's talk a little bit briefly, before we let you go, Rod, about the RMA, the Resource Management Act. It's been decided to be scrapped widely across parties. There's been issues with this for years. What are some of your thoughts around this? Because it is an important piece of legislation, but it hasn't been functioning in the way it was necessarily intended to for a long time.
An important thing that's being lost in all this discussion is all this idea that, you know, the RMA is being biffed, it's being scrapped and all the rest. And in fact, a good deal of the legal principles and decades now of case precedent that's been built up carries on through. And so it's taking the RMA, if you like, and the judicial principles that embodies, which were world-leading at the time in their attempt to be able to manage environmental and economic pressures in one piece of legislation. On to the next stage. So the next stage is to create two separate acts, the Natural and Built Environments Act, and that's going to be a big improvement on the RMA because there'll be a national planning framework there, which will have mandatory national policies and standards that was very deficient in the RMA to underpin that system. And so there'll be environmental natural limits and outcomes and targets and the like. And some, and I think that our way to handle environment and economic issues together will improve from that. Then there's a Strategic Planning Act, which will be looking at long-term spatial planning, where larger entities, that is typically going to be around regional governments or catchments, will be looking at those long-term ways of identifying areas suitable for development and that need to be protected or improved. And then thirdly, there's a Climate Change Adaptation Act, which is mostly about retreat, i.e. from the coasts and other vulnerable places because of climate change. And so those three fit together very well. This has been very carefully thought through, not just in the Randerson report, led by Tony Randerson, the former appeals court judge, who's been very involved in this legislation right from creating the RMA three decades ago, but also the Environmental Defence Society, EMA Northern, Employers and Manufacturers Group, the Property Council and Infrastructure New Zealand. Those entities had had a big project going which had been delving very deeply into all this and very much mirrored was a precursor to the Randerson mm-hmm. report. So there's very good understanding out there of what needs to be done. This is being very much fast-tracked because it's a very complicated process. But the government is hoping to have this legislation in place by the end of next year, 2022. But I think it's a big mistake to say that somehow this relieves pressure on housing because it will help improve the supply of land for housing. But it doesn't come into effect until the end of next year, and it would be a year or two before it's in place and that's worked through. So we've got to work on housing on all kinds of very powerful, shorter-term ways as well.
Absolutely.
But that's a subject, obviously, for another day.
it's one we could talk about for hours, I'm sure, and I'm sure we will come back to it as well. We should, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much, Rod. It's always a pleasure. Have a lovely week, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Thanks so much. See ya.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Rod.